WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO if you prefer words to numbers. Coming up later tonight, we actually read the CBO report on the Republican health care plan, and we're going to tell you what's in it. No pundits, no guessing, no unpleasant assumptions, just actual meat from what is in the report, which you may find interesting. 855-915-9636. Also, coming up later tonight, what's hot, our favorite things from the past week, the strangest things from the past week.
I'm assuming that the snowstorm was not your favorite part of this week.
Oh, yeah. We'll be hearing about the snowstorm later tonight as well.
I'm hurting a little bit.
Yeah. The good news is that, well, there's still some daylight out.
Exactly.
As we come to the airwaves tonight.
I was thinking about that driving in.
Yeah, we've got...
I had my sunglasses on. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, actual sun. Not that you'd know it was anywhere closer to spring with the snow and ice out there.
Yeah. You know, just when all that snow started to melt and you have no more on the ground, here we go.
Yeah.
Blanketed with a snowstorm yesterday. Thanks, Stella.
Yeah. Spring. Don't use the phony fake news names for these storms.
Snowstorm Stella.
It's a nor'easter. We don't name them, okay? you name hurricanes, you don't name nor'easters.
They do that.
This is...
Remember Nemo? How adorable it sounded?
But this is part of hyping up the weather. So that everybody gets all bent out of shape about, oh my God, the planet is dying because climate change, but nobody actually does anything about it.
You're just...
Do you turn off your lights? No.
Personifying storms.
Are you going out and buying more appliances that suck energy even when they're turned off? Yes, you are.
Here's the crazy thing. I'm watching the news on Monday, and people are scrambling. Now, mind you, I heard every possible expletive known to man from anybody that did go to a grocery store on Monday. But watching the news, you would think that nobody has ever lived in New England, has never experienced any sort of snowstorm, whether it be small or large. A single person grabbing like 3 milks, 4 breads, do you think you're going to get stuck for a month?
I went to Market Basket to get lunch on Monday, the one in Reading. Normally, lunchtime at Market Basket, it's still a little crazy. This was like the coming of the apocalypse.
What were you thinking?
Nothing's moving to the parking lot. The 12 items or less line was wrapped around the store to the deli counter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here like...
I like when everybody does a sideways cart thing so it makes room for the people to actually walk through the aisles.
I'm sitting here, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what? Why is everybody in this freaking store today?
What did you expect? It's like a shock to everyone.
I know. And I'm looking at all the carts. Nobody's got water. Nobody's got batteries. Everybody's loading up on like cakes and ice cream and sliced meats.
Of course. I made a fantastic dinner yesterday. We had chicken saved in the fridge. But I did my grocery shopping at 7-Eleven because it was the only place open Monday night when I got out of work.
We had a Harrow's chicken pot pie, which is the best.
Just rub it in.
The best.
Just rub it in.
The best. Love those chicken pot pies. They are yummy, yummy, yummy.
Stormy weather.
Wow, this has just been going in the background this whole time while we're screwing around. And I think that's the iPod's way of telling us,
perfect.
Get on with the news, kids.
Other things did happen. Well, in local news, we found more fraud in Massachusetts. And ain't that a shock? Massachusetts auditor Susan Bump's office identified $17.6 million in questionable or potential fraudulent MassHealth payments between March 2016 and March 2017, according to an annual report released Wednesday. Quote, the MassHealth program is a large, complex, and expensive. It is all too susceptible to improper payments to providers. There are far too many provider bills that get paid despite the fact that they are duplicate of any other payment, lack supporting documentation, or violate regulations governing what is and what is not reimbursable, end quote. That was from Susan Bump. Many of the findings laid out the annual report which were made public in previous audits. The annual report offers a snapshot of the year's worth of 11 audits in MassHealth. Some of the issues Bump's office identified include payments to providers who were prohibited from participating in MassHealth due to federal laws, duplicate payments to individuals who were getting paid by two different state programs, and payments to specific dental providers who provided services in a way that was not consistent with MassHealth regulations. Bump's office is also in the process of completing an additional 13 audits related to MassHealth, and examining whether patients covered by both Medicare and Medicaid were improperly paid for entirely by Medicaid, costing the state's financial reimbursement money. It is auditing payments that are specific to hospice providers, optometrists, and doctors where initial data analysis found potential problems, such as billing MassHealth for an unusual large number of patients in one day.
Did you just call them optometrists?
Optometrists. Snow got to me. It's just, look what happens when you're stuck in the house for 24 hours.
You know, I like that Suzanne Bump. I've said it before and I will say it again.
She has always been on the top of multiple audits. I mean, look at this. This lays out perfectly an example of what's going on. And so many times we do say on this show, what is going on in the Commonwealth? Why is there no oversight? Why are things getting, you know, falling between the cracks?
This number's down, though.
It is. And you know, I do have to disclaim it, with the amount of these improper payments, as they're being called, is small compared to the size of MassHealth. So yeah, we're talking about MassHealth is covering $14.8 billion worth. And this is benefits for 1.9 million people in 2016. So yes, it is. It's strange to talk about numbers in the millions of dollars to be small, but yes, of course, in comparison.
But it's down from previous years too. Mm-hmm. It's not as high as it was, and I think in some cases there might be a little bit of fishing going on here, in the sense that paperwork isn't filled out properly, and so we're going to flag that. And it'd be interesting to see it broken out, because she's doing a good job. And yes, thank you for finding $17.5 million. If a lot of these are going to the same company, well, then we got to figure out what's going on over there. And it sounds like the dental folks might be playing a little fast and loose with their MassHealth billings.
Mm-hmm. And many of these audits did include these sort of situations where dentists, or regardless of what dental procedure you're getting, it is being charged double.
Yeah.
So essentially, these companies are getting more money.
Yeah.
And it's all coming from state.
Yeah.
Which, you know where that comes from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You and I.
And that,
this
and
is where our tax dollars go to.
And that tells me you got to go take a look at those companies and see what the heck is going on over there. Because when you see a lot of those payments going to one place, I'm not going to suggest that it is definitely malfeasance, but I'm going to suggest that it raises the possibility of malfeasance. And so, because it's always, whenever we hear about these big Medicare scams or these big Social Security scams, it's always one doctor. There's like one doctor that's responsible for 80% of the fraudulent billings.
And what was your number one advice that you would give somebody? You say, do the fraud.
Steal little.
Just little at a time.
Steal little. $14.9 billion that we spent in healthcare in this state last year.
Yeah.
Steal little. If you steal little, nobody's going to notice. If you start stealing over $1 million, somebody's going to notice.
Yeah, Susan Bump's on you.
You are not an NFL player. You don't get a multi-million dollar fraud payment every year.
Well, especially in a time where we're talking so much, and we will discuss later in the show about healthcare and so much of that. We understand here in Massachusetts, in the Commonwealth, we do have a problem with money. There's a lot of money that is becoming missing, and understanding how much of our taxpayer dollars and how much money is going into the healthcare system, so MassHealth being that, you question how a lot of this gets by.
Well, because it is a massive bureaucracy.
Of course.
And people are rubber stamping things because they have a big pile of work, and you're basically relying on the auditors to pick it up on the back end, which is where Susan Bump is the best investment the taxpayers make every
year. And from our end to say, you know, and I guess it's being naive and saying, well, how can you let this happen? And completely justifying your explanation for it. It does make sense.
Yeah.
But for the average citizen that's putting money into, you know, taxes, you want to say, how do these people, how do these companies that are already making millions of dollars getting double the amount from a patient, and understanding how expensive it is? You know, I guess we're lucky here in Massachusetts where we do sort of have our own health connector. So it's a little bit easier and a little more affordable than it is for everybody else in the rest of the country. But still, it is very expensive to get on it.
That's where I'd say you probably want someone in the AG's office to take a look at what's going on here and see if there is a particular provider or two that is getting a lot of double billings. In national news, President Donald Trump pays his taxes, or at least he did in 2005, according to MSNBC and The Rachel Maddow Show. After posting an exclusive about having Trump's tax returns, Maddow revealed the reporter David K. Johnson had brought her two pages of Trump's 2005 tax return, which Johnson said were shoved through his mail slot, showing that Trump paid $36.5 million in taxes on $150 million in income in 2005, a tax rate of 24.5%, just slightly below the average millionaire tax rate of 27.4%.
So we get by the first storm that is a snowstorm, and then everybody needs to tune in to the Rachel Maddow Show, the gem of MSNBC.
Tonight on the Rachel Maddow Show, we have got the bottle of Coca-Cola Geraldo Rivera found in Al Capone's vault.
What?
Exclusive.
Wasn't this... That's what I imagined.
Yeah.
I had a flashback to Geraldo Rivera trying to open Capone's vault.
Here's where the American public allows itself to get snookered. If you actually tuned into that last night, you're a fool. Because if somebody actually had valuable tax information on Donald Trump, real returns, complete returns, returns that show his income and losses and all the rest of this, they're not giving that to Rachel Maddow.
Exactly.
Okay? Everything that Rachel Maddow puts on the air gets kicked up and approved by somebody higher up at NBC in the news division. And if Rachel Maddow is out on the internet saying, hey, I got Donald Trump's tax returns, you better believe everybody in the NBC newsroom is sitting there going, wait a minute, why is she getting that story and we're not? So just the fact that it's on at 9 o'clock at night, or 8 o'clock, or whatever, she on at 8 or 9? Mm-hmm. I think she's on at 9.
It was
now.
9, and I did tune in for 5 minutes. I looked
listen to her blather.
Yeah. I watched her, and I said, I'm like, does she ever not cry? And it's so snarky and how she comes across. Yeah. I'm like, I can't honestly watch this, regardless of what information she was going to tell me. And, you know, as the big moment approached, because I did watch some of it today. Of course, it's all compiled on the internet in a much more compact version as she dragged out last night. But she clarified that, you know, this would be the returns from just 2005. We're like, okay, fine.
That's we'll not wait. How you hyped it up on the internet,
yeah,
Rachel.
And, you know, and then the moment of truth comes and nothing.
Yeah.
But that's actually what happened. Nothing. It's... You know, you wanted this big buildup. I guess, I don't even know if you really wanted it. But she had essentially two pages that showed him earning, as you said, $150 million, paying $38 million roughly. You know, there's no shady deals, no Russians,
no. Nothing.
So exciting.
Yeah, Donald Trump paid his taxes in 2005. Yeah. News
so with
flash.
That, you know, millions of people dared to test the waters of MSNBC and then return to the comfort of the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Yeah. Not a good look for MSNBC or Rachel Maddow. The good news is that that gives her credibility a big kick in the butt and will drive audience away. So way to flame out. If you're going to flame out spectacularly.
And the Pulitzer Prize winner that she kept clearly stating where this was coming from to, I don't know, give some sort of validity to his greatness.
Yeah.
He received it, you know, in the mailbox.
Just showed up in the mailbox.
It just happened. It wasn't solicited. It wasn't, He said, I don't know, maybe Donald Trump put it in.
Yeah, which Donald Trump...
he had Donald Trump great time on Twitter.
Did not go to Westchester to put his tax returns in somebody's mailbox. We would have a record of that because he's in Washington, D.C.
Now, here's a big question that's been floating around. Was this illegal or was this legal?
Well, whoever handed over those tax returns broke the law.
Yes.
Okay, by distributing them. Rachel Maddow going on television and talking about them also breaks the law. However, you can make an argument that there is a public interest and a public right to know. As a journalist, she's going to be covered on that. Really, if she's going to be fined for anything, it should be for having a bad show last night, for wasting people's time for 20 minutes hyping up these tax returns. And then you got 1 year that shows that he paid his taxes.
And
newsflash, president paid taxes.
And he paid, what was it, 34% of his income?
24.5, which, and he paid alternative minimum tax on most of it.
But it's interesting to look at the breakdown of other people that have names in politics, and especially past presidents, because there has been such a spotlight put on President Trump for not releasing his taxes.
Yeah.
Just like, and that's the key sentence that comes in every time you hear that, just like every modern day president has, and in kind of putting the spotlight on Donald Trump and saying how different he is and how clearly he has something to hide. When in reality, for the most part, he is paying more than many of these other millionaires.
He should have paid somewhere around $40 million. If he's not doing any kind of accounting trickery, everybody in that tax bracket's doing accounting trickery. You know, the fact that he paid 24.5% means he actually did a worse job of it than some people. Because there are corporations that make more money than that that are paying a 5%.
Look at MSNBC's
net effective tax rate.
Parent owner.
Yeah.
Comcast, how much are they paying? I believe it's in that 8%, 9%.
Comcast is paying somewhere, I think 18% actually. Mm-hmm. So, less than Donald Trump. So, 2005, at least, he's off the hook. Maybe some years after that, massive amounts of money came in from Russia, and we need to be concerned about that. Somehow, I don't think so, but you better believe they're going to keep whipping this up. All day long, it's been this endless, we have Donald Trump's tax returns, and look at how little he paid. The guy paid $36.5 million in taxes. Okay? He's paying his fair share, folks. He's paying his fair share.
But it's Russia.
Yeah.
Bad Russia.
but they make it sound like, oh, Donald Trump is... Yeah, I read one piece today. It was like, Donald Trump's paying taxes at the same rate as the 99%, even though he's one of the 1%. I'm like, give me a break. Please stop this. Because the guy paid $36.5 million in taxes. If the law allows him to do that, and nobody is suggesting anything in this tax return is illegal, if the law allows him to do that, then he's doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Under the law.
You just pointed out
the story.
Exactly what everybody should be focused on. He did it by under the law standards. If you don't like it, then change the law.
President obeys law. Newsflash tonight on the Rachel Maddow Show. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
It was a joke. It was a complete joke.
I keep hoping at some point that she will rise above this stupid persona that she has and this stupid little niche that she has of whipping up low information, pseudo-intellectual voters into a frenzy.
You mean stepping away from her Hillary Clinton shrine that she has?
And it just never goes away. It just never gets better. And I'm at a point with her now where I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore.
It's sad to see the state of mainstream media being placed in the hands of somebody like that.
So bad. So bad. In world news, populism did not prevail in today's elections in the Netherlands. The right-wing PVV party, headed by Geert Wilders, picked up seven seats in the country's 150-seat parliament, while the liberal VVD party clung to a majority position of 31 seats, a loss of 10, according to preliminary results. These results will likely allow Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte to retain his position, but fall short of a rejection of Wilders' campaign promises, which included a ban on Muslim immigrants, a ban on the Quran, and an exit from the European Union. So there's spin on both sides of this here. The reality of it is that Geert Wilders managed to pick up 7 seats with a blatantly racist platform that said, no more Muslims, we're going to shut down the mosques, we're going to ban the Quran, and we're going to get out of the EU, while the liberals lost 10 seats.
Yeah, now mind you, in a country that has this long tradition of religious tolerance, Wilders has, as you said, asserted him with Islam. He was talking about it's more dangerous than Nazism, that the Quran is more anti-Semitic than Mein Kampf, and it should be banned in bookstores, called mosques Nazi temples. And I mean, you know, this isn't usually the Dutch way. So he really positioned himself very different from the populist vote. You know, he also articulated pro-Russia positions. He sought to keep more distance from Putin. So he was saying, yes, I agree with Russia, but you know what, I'm kind of against Putin. This is all because anti-Moscow feelings that are strong with the Netherlands after the MH17 disaster. You probably remember in July 2014, 193 Dutch citizens were killed. So it'll be interesting to see what the final count on this is. And I mean, do we actually, we think that he's going to retain, but is he going to keep his spot? I mean, Wilders came in pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, it's the prime minister has got enough seats. There's going to be another coalition government. Nobody at 31, the VVD party has more seats in parliament than anybody else. Okay,
no, but with
that's 1/5. So they can't move forward without a coalition government, and the PVV party does gain some clout.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough for Wilders to be prime minister, but certainly enough to have an impact on whatever the coalition government is. I mean, they've got...
Because, I mean, we're talking about a party that is extreme right-wing conservative.
Yeah, but they've got 19 seats.
Does that...
So that's about a... That's, you know, that's a decent amount, whereas the Liberal Party has got 31.
Now, to you, does that speak volumes in the sense of what is happening or what happened here in the United States with this election? What happened with Brexit?
I think there is...
This anti-establishment kind of bringing... I mean, Wilders, amongst all the other things, he said that he wanted to make Netherlands ours again. Basically echoed
There were a lot of similarities between him and Trump in this whole thing.
And anybody that's listening, do yourself a favor. Just Google Wilders. See what he looks like. He's quite the character. He just looked like he should have been in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I don't know.
He looks a little bit like Vault Boy if you play the Fallout games. And you know who Vault Boy is. He looks a little bit like what Vault Boy would look like if he was human.
He's strange.
Do you want me to go there? Do you really want me to go there and tell you what's going on in the world?
That you agree with me?
No, well, no, yes, but you asked me for the reasons why.
Okay.
You want to know the reasons why? It's because you got 10 million people displaced from Syria. Okay, who are not educated people, who are not the best and the brightest. They are the farmers. They are the landscapers. They are the fishermen. They are the builders. They are janitors and waiters and waitresses. You get all these people who have now flooded into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants them. Okay, they don't speak the language. They don't understand the culture. They're refugees. They're not looking to assimilate. They're looking to find a place where they can live the lives that they used to live without being gassed or bombed by the Russians, the Syrians, ISIS, or the United States.
Which I understand, and that is why I'm saying it's echoing so much of what happened here in the United States. Yes, we may not have had millions of influx of Syrian refugees, but that's really what President Trump posed his campaign about.
Well, what happens?
Making America great again, getting back those blue-collar jobs and giving them to Americans, and you shouldn't be here illegally.
That's a different set of circumstances. Very different.
To a point.
No. Wildly, we're apples and oranges in that case. What's happening?
But
in Europe?
But you don't think the sense of a voter?
No.
Is saying that we want to take back our country.
Different reasons. What happened?
Of course, different reasons.
What happened in Europe is Angela Merkel opened her mouth and said, hey, everybody come to Germany.
Of course.
So.
And then they shut down their door, and then it spilled over into every country.
7 million Syrians head for Germany, and they wind up all over the European Union. And the Dutch are sitting there, and they're saying, hey, wait a minute, we're a small country.
We never signed up for it.
We don't have a lot of land. We don't have a lot of people. We can't absorb this. We didn't ask for this. But because we're part of the European Union, we have to accept this. So what you have is one country in the European Union for selfish reasons, which that's a separate conversation that we could have down the road. But one country in the European Union for selfish reasons says, hey, everybody come on over here. Everybody floods in. And all the rest of the countries in the European Union are like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't sign up for this. We didn't sign up to be caretakers for 7 million refugees. This is not our problem. And one of the hallmarks of Europeans is their provincialism, okay? And by provincialism, it's what we call townies around here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows the townies. Drinking at the same bar for the last 30 years. Never left town, never gonna leave town. They got an opinion about everything, and they hate anybody who's not local. European countries are basically townies. You got your French townie, your Dutch townie, you got your Irish townie, your Spanish townie, and they all sit around and they're like, our culture is sacred. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, our culture is sacred and our way of life is the greatest way of life on the planet and we're never going to assimilate. The fact that the EU even got to a point where these people agreed to open their borders and share people back and forth is astounding. Because it flies in the face of everything they believe over there. So now you got 7 million Muslims thrown into the mix. Nobody wants them, okay? The Dutch don't even like the French being around or the Belgians being mm-hmm. around. Now you got Muslims, and they're like, oh my, we don't know how to deal with this. We don't want this.
It's not even just being around, it's understanding what the toll on each of these countries was.
And this,
the fact that you have infrastructures that are being burdened by this. You have healthcare, all this money that is being paid by whether you're talking about German citizens, the Dutch, French.
Correct.
That's all going in, just like we pay taxes, into the country and is now being used for that. Housing, what, I mean, you can go on.
But in the case of Europe, it is, to a certain extent, just straight-up racism, okay? The people who are backing Wilders, in some cases, are just straight-up, we don't like anybody that's not Dutch. We don't want them in our country. But there is also that belief, which extends beyond the hardcore Wilders supporters, that the European Union is a bad idea. And if we weren't part of the European Union, if we hadn't agreed to the open borders, we wouldn't be having this problem right now. And if Germany hadn't behaved irresponsibly, we wouldn't be having this problem right now.
And you're seeing these questions come up more and more in the past couple of years.
Maybe we're better off not being part of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dutch are certainly in a position to do that because on a per capita basis, they've got more money than the Germans do. The Germans may have the biggest economy.
They're one of the smallest countries, and they have the fifth largest economy in the European Union.
But the Dutch, per capita, have more money. So and if they walk away, that is a massive blow to the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
It is the fifth largest economy. Now, France is like the third largest economy, which gives you some sense of the trouble Europe has. So it's really about, are we letting a leader of a foreign nation decide what's going to happen in our country? That is the broader base of support that Wilders has outside of the hardcore right wing, get all the Muslim people out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And if he'd run strictly on that and not thrown in all this stuff about ban the Muslims, close the mosques, ban the Quran, they might have won. And you might be looking at another country making plans to get out of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
We still have the French election coming up, which is going to be another test for the European Union. There's more elections. Norway, I think, is coming up later this year. That's going to be another big question.
And it looks like Le Pen sort of is on track to.
She's going to make it to the runoff.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be in the top two. She's going to make it to the runoff. And then it's a question of how far to the right France wants to go. In the United States, it's a different situation because it's not about racism, per se. It's not about. It's not even about Muslims in this country because they're really other.
But I think that was the difference between what Wilders was trying to push and calling it Islaming.
Right.
Europe.
Other than Iranians, but it's a different situation over there because they're going from a reality of having almost no Muslims to having suddenly 7 million of them. The United States, we got Iranians all over the place in this country. A bunch of them came here during the revolution because it wasn't safe for them to stay there. We have a lot, Boston, we have a lot of university students from all over the world. So it's not, the Muslim backlash in this country tends to be very limited and tends to be limited to the type of people who have gun racks and these colors don't run bumper stickers on their cars who are like, Muslims did 9/11. And it's like, you have a point there, but that's the bigger issue that got Donald Trump in the White House is jobs. And this question of what happened to the jobs in America, because the jobs are gone.
Yeah, but what I was trying to compare is not in the sense of, I was talking more about in the sense of the mind of a voter and saying, yes, this is our, that nationalistic, I'm going to take my country back. Whereas I understand that the EU is completely different. It would be like the individual 50 states here in the United States and Oklahoma deciding that we are going to take in all the Mexicans and have open borders.
But you can't do that in this country.
No, of course. And I know. And I know, I understand the difference between that. And you laid it out very clearly. I'm just saying that nationalistic mentality that I think the voters were taking, or at least the voters that were in this case voting for Wilders.
WMFO Medford.
Maybe not in the sense of so extreme right wing, bordering on the line of anti-Semitic.
Donald Trump had the these colors don't run crowd when he said make America great again and put out a hat. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to do. Put out a hat that says make America great again, and everybody who's got the bald eagle against the stars and stripes in the back window of their pickup truck or painted on the hood of their van, they're going to go vote for Trump, okay? Because he's their guy. Rah, rah, America's the greatest. That's not what won him the White House. What won him the White House was jobs. I am going to create jobs. I am going to bring the jobs back. And they're going to be good paying jobs. Now, this was something that Barack Obama ignored for 8 years as we watched. I mean, outsourcing has been going on in this country since the 1970s. This isn't anything new, okay? It got worse. It got a lot worse during the Obama administration because, as we explained a few months ago, when we made China a normalized trading partner of the United States, about 10 million jobs disappeared overnight because everybody went to China.
It's cheaper.
Because I can get an employee for like 30 cents an hour as opposed to the 13 bucks an hour I got to pay somebody to work on an assembly line in this country.
Mm-hmm. And you wonder why so many people were losing their jobs, losing their homes.
And it's great for China. Mm-hmm. And it's great for the people at the very top of these corporations who are making piles of money. The problem is the average American's out of work and the jobs that are available don't pay anything.
And throughout the administration, after 4 years and then after again another 4 years, it continued to worsen. And this is essentially the position that we've got into when President Trump came into office in January.
So I'm the president of the United States looking at this situation, and yes, I'm playing the Donald in this situation, and I'm looking at the American jobs landscape. What do I do to fix this? Because Donald Trump rightly understands something that the Democrats don't seem to get, which is having the number of Americans out of work or the number of Americans working in very low-paying jobs that we had under the Obama administration is unsustainable. It turns us into a third world country. It's not just about jobs. You need good paying jobs. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to create jobs, I've got to look at what I can control and what I can't control. What I can't control is China. China wants to pay its people 30 cents an hour and the federal government subsidizes factory workers. We can't do that in this country. We won't do that in this country. It's anti-competitive and it would bankrupt us. So what can we do? Well, we can put huge tariffs on their stuff to make it less attractive to manufacture in China. We can remove illegal immigrants from this country because they put downward pressure on wages, particularly in low-skilled jobs.
And for so long, corporations got away with it.
Because we have unethical business owners in this country that will hire illegals and pay them under the table.
Again, it's cheaper.
It's cheaper. It's more money for me. It's less money for them. They're happy
to
work. I mean,
the final equation every single time leads to money.
The other thing that I can do is I can spend a whole pile of money on infrastructure, which is going to create a lot of construction jobs, and then hope that industry follows or something comes out of this, because infrastructure is not a long-term solution. Roads and bridges and dams, we need the investment. Mm-hmm. Everything's falling apart in this country. This needs to be done, and this is a good way to get a lot of Americans back to work. The problem is, once you've rebuilt the infrastructure, those jobs are gone. It's done. It's over.
You're back at zero point again.
So you can buy time with that, but you better have some long-term solutions, which are, in Donald Trump's case, renegotiating trade deals around the world.
It's a combination of everything.
So that you can't have a country like China paying its workers 30 cents an hour with a central government that subsidizes its people. Until you fix that problem, the jobs are gone and they're never coming back. That's what he's up against. That's why these things are happening.
But this is what you were saying. I mean, you were talking about posing tariffs. We had, what was it, last year, Ford announced that they were going to move one of their plants into Mexico because it was going to be cheaper for labor, and then announced after much scrutiny, and Donald Trump pointing to that in his campaign and saying, this is a perfect example of what is happening here in America. Yeah. You have, because we allow it, it's not... Because they choose, we allow this to happen. And this is what we have allowed more and more for the past 8 years. And I'm not going to say it was just during the Obama administration, but it was even escalated more through that. And allowing these companies to seek cheaper labor, whether you're going to Mexico or China or India or any other country, and allowing these corporations to take advantage of that, which in turn left people with millions of people without jobs.
Exactly. And that's the problem that America has. What do we do with the masses of American people who don't have a college education, even the millions of people who do have college educations, who can't get middle-class jobs, okay? We spelled it out on the show shortly after the election, certainly back in January. Factory work used to be the middle class in America. If you looked at the median pay scale in the United States, when we had factory jobs, the middle of the road, the middle class income was the same income that people who'd spent 5 or 6 years working in a factory earned.
It was the everyday blue collar.
That was your middle class. No, you also didn't have magnitudes of 100 times between factory worker income and the guy who owns the factory income. That's a whole separate problem, and one that Donald Trump is not at all equipped to deal with. But in terms of getting Americans jobs that pay more than minimum wage, we have to be protectionist and we have to remove the illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. These are sad realities.
Okay? And that's one of the realities of why we're talking about having to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Well, we've gotten to that point here in the United States where you can't live above the poverty line with minimum wage.
This is where I say, if it had been Bernie Sanders, he would have just raised the minimum wage to $20 an hour, and all the illegal immigrants would be out of work. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm an employer and I got to pay somebody $20 an hour, you better believe I'm going to hire somebody who can speak the language and who's in this country legally, because there's no cost savings for me anymore.
There's no benefits of it.
There's no benefits.
Why are you going to risk illegal actions?
Exactly. I am not going to risk the federal government coming in and shutting me down if it's not making any money for me. Which is how these unethical business people thrive, is they take that gamble that they're not going to get caught by the feds. Mm-hmm. It's a gamble that usually doesn't pay off, but they get away with it for a while before they have to go spend some time in a, you know, 3-star prison facility. You only get 5 stars if you're a Wall Street trader.
And we pay for it.
Yes.
And today in sports news, we learned women athletes say low pay, no play. Members of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team will skip the International Ice Hockey Federation World Championship after a breakdown in negotiations with USA Hockey. The law firm representing the players, Ballads Farr, announced on Wednesday. The players vowed not to participate in the tournament. They've won six times after, quote, more than a year of stalled negotiations with USA Hockey to secure fair wages and support, end quote. Players were scheduled to arrive in Plymouth, Michigan for training camp next week ahead of the World Championship, which will begin March 31st. Quote, we are asking for a living wage and for USA Hockey to fully support its programs for women and girls and to stop treating us like an afterthought. That was Captain Megan Duggan, a two-time Olympian and member of the six World Championship teams, who said in a statement, also, quote, we have represented our country with dignity and deserve to be treated with fairness and respect, end quote. And may I say, I'm a huge fan of Megan Duggan. She is a Danvers girl. I know her brother from high school, so she is a great representation, and we're lucky to have some of these girls play, and it is so sad to see something like this happen. A team that is multi-gold medal winners, except for the last one. They got bronze, but a world championship silver. Yeah, it's just sad to see.
With all due respect, who's paying for this?
No, I understand. I understand what you're going to say.
And
there is no national women's hockey.
There is, but it doesn't pay anything.
And, of course.
And part of the argument that they make in their statement of their boycott is that the men have an advantage because they can earn a living in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nobody promised you money to play for the U.S. team. It used to be in this country that you played for the honor of being asked.
That I understand.
And I understand that it's expensive. And I understand that things cost money. And I understand that, you know, the $60,000 stipend plus health insurance plus all your travel expenses plus all your meals may not be enough to cover six months.
Was that the total, $60,000?
It was actually $85,000 if they won medals. $60,000 basic.
Yeah, but that's just for the Olympics.
Plus all travel.
That's just for the Olympics.
That's still pretty good money for playing amateur hockey.
Again, this is professional.
It's not
Essentially.
It's not. Okay? You go ask a track athlete how much money they're getting paid.
I know, and we've had this discussion many times on the show.
Go ask
a curler about the difference.
Or a bobsledder.
In
how
many
much
of
they're
these smaller
paid.
Sports, you need to be good enough so that you will get sponsors, that you will have some sort of brand represent. You represent that brand.
That is correct.
So you get paid.
So why isn't U.S. hockey out doing? Why isn't women's hockey out doing that? Go get Nike to give you a few million dollars if you want a few million dollars. The reality is, you don't get paid because no one is paying to watch you. Okay? The way that you make money for yourself in this country is to make money for somebody else.
But
ultimately, everybody is doing that. You are making money for your employer, or you are making money for a league, or you are making money for bankers.
But they're not talking about huge money in fluxes.
$60,000.
More per player.
Per player.
Not for the World Championship. You're talking about for the Olympics.
For the Olympics, $60,000.
That's for the Olympics, which we're not discussing. We're talking about the yearly championships, which represent your country. Yes, it is an honor to do that, but every person gets paid to do it. We're talking about they barely get a minimum wage for playing that.
They shouldn't be getting paid at all. It's amateur sport.
But you're representing the country. Just like I think that men's hockey should get paid for doing it too. It doesn't matter.
But the men aren't getting paid. I mean, it's the same. We had the same argument when we were talking about women's soccer versus men's soccer, mm-hmm. and how much they were getting
but
paid.
You cannot compare
women's soccer,
what the demands were from U.S. women's soccer
Well, women's, they were
complaining about getting, because they are in a professional league. It's just like the WNBA when they say that they don't get enough compared to men's. That you can't compare, because when you talk about people that are buying tickets for men's soccer versus women's soccer, you can't even compare that, where there is not a national league for women's hockey that needs to be taken.
There is a national league for women's hockey. It pays garbage because it is in its earliest days. Okay? There is no money to be made as a women's hockey player.
That's at the amateur level. It is not.
There is a national women's hockey league in this country. Okay? It doesn't pay anything. It's a seasonal league. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's like women's football in this country.
I know, and that is why, unfortunately, many of these players just stay in it during their college years, if not maybe a couple of years after.
I hate to say it, but if you want to make money, you got to go do something where there is money to be made. You can't hold.
That I can agree with.
You can't hold the U.S. national team hostage because you think you should get paid for something that no one is paying to watch.
You're making it seem like their demands are incredibly large, and what you're talking about, $60,000, is for the Olympics. Which is not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is this single event that is taking place where they are getting very, very minimal wages to play.
Let me make this.
So in your opinion, then yes, it is an honor for you to represent a country.
Let me make this very simple.
But it's a difference, Derek, when you are in the NHL getting paid millions of dollars every year, and it is an honor for you to represent Team USA compared to women's, where this is your means of income.
If you're on a national team in men's hockey, it's like the guard reserves. You know, it's 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks a year you go and you practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the time, you're getting your practice in on the ice because you're playing the sport professionally. That's an option for you, okay? We didn't used to do it that way. And maybe this is where the problem came in, because it used to be that the national team in the United States
was not professional.
Was all college kids,
mm-hmm,
who weren't getting paid. And performing well on the national team was your ticket to a big-time NHL contract.
Well, now kids are coming out of prep school and college,
yeah,
getting scholarships.
Which means if you wanted to have any kind of a national team at all, you're either putting out peewee players, mm-hmm, or you're taking everybody who wasn't good enough for the NHL. Meanwhile,
well, NHL essentially is getting 90% of their players from Canada and Sweden.
Right. Meanwhile, every other country in the world is like, you know, well, we only have so many hockey players, so we're going to use our pros. Look, good for the men. It doesn't hurt them financially. For the women, now you ask if they're asking for too much. If people are paying $0 to see something, and you're asking to be paid $1 to do that thing, then yes, you're asking too much. Because right now, people are paying $0 to watch women's hockey.
People are paying $0 to go to these world games.
That money goes to the agency, whoever's putting the thing on. We're actually paying we're paying a $30,000 fine for not participating. They're not handing out prize money.
There's
to
no
these
sponsors
teams.
To it. There's no.
Whether there's. I don't know what the sponsorship arrangement is, but I'm saying the organizing body, the International Hockey Commission, or whoever the heck it is not paying out prize money to the winners.
But it's crazy to me in thinking about women's. The best in women's hockey is not getting massive sponsors.
Because it's not worth anything. It doesn't make money for anybody. This is the world that we live in.
But you're talking about Nike, Under Armour, they're not going to sponsor a six-time winning team?
No, because there is zero interest in women's hockey in the United States of America outside of the people who play.
That is so strange to me, because when the last Olympics happened, I believe that every single person that I knew was watching U.S. hockey, and not just because it was a hometown person.
Once every 4 years, we watch gymnastics, too. Once every 4 years, we watch power walking.
Yeah,
once every 4 years, we watch curling.
Money.
And they get paid for the Olympics. The other 3 years, nobody cares. You couldn't give away women's hockey tickets.
I can't get on board with you comparing, though, women's hockey and curling and badminton and all of these smaller Olympics.
Why?
track and field.
What's the difference?
Because the sponsorship is much bigger on that scale.
But it isn't. It isn't. There's no big sponsors for the curling teams.
Of course there isn't. People do that. We've had this conversation.
The people on the curling teams pay to play the rest of the year.
If you need to be a track and field, somebody that relies on that solely for income, that you devote every single day of your life to practicing and this team, you need to be good enough to be to have a sponsor, have everything paid for.
And you can't do it because every year the Olympics rolls around and UPS rolls out their ad about, here's our half dozen Olympians who spend, you know, nights when they're not at the track practicing, throwing packages around because they got to make a living. Mm-hmm. And UPS throws them some extra money and gives them some time off so they can train for 6 months and make UPS look good. All right, that's the arrangement. And if you're in women's hockey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that nobody cares. I'm sorry that you can't
make... There are people that care.
I'm not saying that nobody cares.
You're completely blowing this. So much bigger, the comparison to what their actual demands are.
Their demands, as I said earlier... If people are paying $0, if people are paying $0 to watch something.
So you're saying nobody's going to these games at all. Nobody's interested in women's hockey. There's no money at all going into this.
If there was money to be made on women's hockey.
If there was no money at all, it would be non-existent. But it is.
Did Nike put out a hijab with a swoosh on it last week?
Yes.
Okay. So you know what that means? There is a bigger market for athletic Muslim female headgear than there is for women's hockey because Nike is not throwing a lot of money at women's hockey.
You're really comparing that.
Yes, I am.
You're
really comparing
Nike, because an American company.
Because at the end of the day,
that's trying to
the sponsorship decision
from what is going on in our political climate.
At the end,
come
of,
on.
No, that's got the political climate has nothing to do with it.
That decision
to make that product is made by a group of marketing people who sit there and say, how much money can we make if we do this? Can we make money on this product?
Can we make money on this product?
Promotional
also,
benefit from this.
Are we going to get promotional benefit? Is every single mainstream media news outlet going to run that Nike is so above the curve and above what is going on politically here in the United States that they're going to take a product and create a special one for Muslim women? Oh, praise Nike. Look at them. They look great.
They could do the same thing at lower cost.
They're going to make more money 10 times
no.
just in...
This is where you fail to grasp marketing, okay?
That's so strange. I have a degree in that.
Well,
I get it.
I do it for a living.
No, I understand.
So this is where you fail to get it, okay? Nike could make more money at a lower cost by simply putting some Muslim athletes in their TV commercials or throwing a bunch of money at the Council for American Islamic Relations.
I never disagreed with that.
And you don't have to do product R&D. You don't have to manufacture things. You don't have to distribute them. You don't have to send your salespeople out to convince stores like Dick's and Modell's
course,
to buy them.
You cannot disagree. What I'm saying that regardless of what you plan to make money on that product, you know that your the press releases, the public notice is going to bring you more attention.
What happens every time somebody says they support Muslims in this country? They lose business. What happened to Starbucks? The CEO of Starbucks comes out and says, I'm going to hire 10,000 immigrants. Guess what? Starbucks sales are down. Starbucks brand reputation has plummeted because Americans are furious that Starbucks said that. They're not going. And Starbucks is spinning all these stories about, well,
nobody's going to Starbucks. It's strange. Nike has,
Starbucks
for
same,
the most part.
Starbucks same store sales were down in the most recent quarter.
A huge target market. And that target market right now is millennials and athletes.
I don't see a lot of millennials getting excited about women's hockey. It is bigger than it was 10 years ago. And again, I don't mean to take anything at all away from women's hockey.
No, I understand that.
It's great. But the reality is, there is not enough interest for major sponsors to step forward and say, we're going to make a $20 million commitment to this, or we're going to make a $10 million commitment to this. Nike will spend...
Which I never disagreed with, because Nike will spend, $10 million and $20 million when we're talking at that magnitude is much larger. But what you consider reality, the reality is that you're blowing this out of proportion and making it seem like these athletes are demanding so much.
If you are demanding anything when there is nothing, then you are demanding too much.
There is something.
Where? Where? Where is the money coming from?
It would be non-existent if there was no demand.
Where is the money coming from?
It would be non-existent.
This is where your liberal side shines through, right here. Where is the money coming from?
My liberal side?
Yes.
No, it's logical thinking of an intelligent person.
No, that's...
Of course, because anything that goes against what you say is...
I feel that these people should be paid. Okay, where is the money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
This is me being a typical conservative.
No, I understand.
Where is the money coming from?
The logicalness of it.
Who has the money to pay them?
Well, I'm going to move on.
Who has the money to pay them?
Mm-hmm.
Answer the question. Where is the money coming from?
I told you multiple times where it could possibly come from.
Then why isn't it? Because
good
of
question.
All the reasons I just laid out, because it is not worth it to anybody to support
then
women's hockey.
Then we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Well, you can agree to live in fantasy land.
I'm happy there. Today in food news, Organic claims Miss Bigger Picture study says... Sorry to green market loving hipsters, but it turns out that eating organic isn't always great for the planet. It may only have a marginal effect on your health. A new study published in the journal Science Advances report that even though organic farms have eco-friendly benefit of using fewer pesticides, they also use more land, which is harmful to the planet. Researchers at the University of British Columbia analyzed organic crop farming across 17 criteria, such as yield, impact on climate change, farmer livelihood, and consumer health by looking at existing scientific literature on its results. For one, they found environmental benefits of organic farming can be offset by lower yields such as crops, typically 19 to 25% lower than conventional farming. Quote, while organic farming may be better for things like biodiversity, farmers will need more land to grow the same amount of food. And land conservation for agriculture is a leading contributor of habitat loss and climate change. So everybody thinks that they're helping the planet by eating organic and shopping at Whole Foods, when in actual reality, it takes up more land. There's some fewer pesticides. Everything's still getting sprayed.
WMFO Medford. I kind of look at this as liberals eating themselves, because what else are you doing with the land? Are we talking about growing food as opposed to putting up a solar farm? Growing food as opposed to leaving the land alone? I'm not buying this.
Mm-hmm. No, essentially the land's going to be used for some reason or another, and there's a market for organic food,
yeah,
so you might
use it. You know, isn't it just as well that we use it to grow more kale?
No, of course. It's with the other side saying, aha, look at this study.
Yeah.
You guys are dumb.
Yeah. This is like when you're really extreme environmentalists come in and they're like, everything you do is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then more extreme environmentalists come in and they're like, hey, extreme environmentalists, I see you're still wearing leather. And everybody just starts arguing with everybody else. And it's like, what? Can anyone win? No. No, no matter what you do.
You can never win with climate change.
No matter what you do, you're wrecking the planet. We are a species that consumes. In technology news, two Russian officers are among four people charged in the attack on Yahoo that stole personal information from 500 million users in 2016. Dmitry Dokuchev and Igor Sushenchin were accused of paying hackers to break into Yahoo's servers, partly for intelligence gathering and partly to obtain information that could be sold for a profit. Both Russians are officers of the FSB, Russia's security service formerly known as the KGB. The indictment marks the first time that Russian officials have been charged in hacking attacks by the U.S. government. One of the hackers hired by the Russians, Alexei Balan, has previously been indicted on two occasions for hacking into U.S. e-commerce sites. So,
so the Russians aren't so good?
Interesting. Yeah, it's the Russians. Somebody had
when all this time we thought it was China.
Somebody had an article today. I think this was on USA Today. Why do the Russians outsource their hacking? Because you, person who wrote the article, has no idea at all how security services work. Okay, the first rule And I say this as somebody who was studying for a CIA entrance examination years ago. The first rule is plausible deniability. Even if you know nothing about intelligence services, you've probably heard that phrase at least once in your life. So the reason you go hire somebody, you go hire some hacker, is so that the people at the top can say, we didn't do that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What? No. And then you move the money through a bunch of different channels so that it is not immediately clear who did it. Now, the Russians are going to come back and they're going to say, these guys were off the reservation. And these guys were taking state funds and trying to steal IDs so that they could sell them on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Even with